Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the NCSC CCWG Accountability Webinar on Tuesday, 19 July 2016. On the call today, we have Alexandra and Gonzalez, Carlos Raul, Sherry Langdon Orr, Christopher Dennett, Glenn McKnight, Yorfell Single, Olivia Kwame, Raul Ploma, Robin Gross, Romina Florenka, Wisdom Donko, Sonigito Ekwe, Tapani Tervanen, Artie Bavana, Sam DeFranco, and from staff we have myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much. Over to you, Robin.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And thanks to everyone who has joined in today's call to discuss the CCWG accountability work efforts going forward for NCSG. Let me just quickly go over this agenda and then we can dive right into it. So first we can very briefly update where we are right now and what's coming up. Then let's go through the different work stream two issues in some detail. We've had a number of members sign up in the last month or so to work on some of these issues, and so it'd be great if we can really dive into some of these individual issues and start working through some of our policy goals and figuring out who can do what. Then we can talk about setting up the next meeting, perhaps the same time next month, see how folks feel about that, than any other business. Anything else anyone wanted to add to this, or shall we just dive right in? Anyone have any questions, comments, or concerns on this agenda? Okay, well, not seeing any. I'll go ahead. If you like to interrupt at any time, just go ahead and raise your hand in the Adobe Connect room, and if I see you, I will ask you to comment. So the first issue is, where are we and what's next for the CCWG? So first, sort of a work stream one, those recommendations were approved by the board, the chartering organizations, and the bylaws have been drafted to conform those recommendations with the bylaws with those recommendations, and those are about to be implemented. I expect that it's on track for the September 30 transition or shortly thereafter. The legal committee for the CCWG has been re-engaged. We had set up a subcommittee of CCWG members last year when we hired the law firms that were advising us on the corporate governance models and some of the other issues that had arisen in Workstream 1. But then the legal committee sort of got a lot of its tasks were removed from the legal committee and went to the co-chairs of the CCWG in terms of managing the lawyers. And the co-chairs are really looking for a change in that, so they've suggested that we reopen that issue, and that issue has subsequently been decided that the legal committee would be re-engaged and will try to manage the legal teams with cost effectiveness in mind, as well as things like independence and expertise amongst the different legal counsels that we're working with. There's also ongoing work with respect to implementation of the new independent review panel process. We have to design this system, I say from scratch, but it's not entirely from scratch, because there are similar types of dispute resolution systems that have been created over the years in other forums. And so we're sort of starting from the place of taking a look at what others have done and trying to modify that to create the system that would meet ICANN's specific needs. And so those are really the main things that are going on right now with respect to Workstream 1. And much of the meat of our issues, well, actually, let me mention one other thing that isn't on this agenda, but we discussed it a little bit in our policy call a couple hours ago, is that we are looking for volunteers from the stakeholder group to join some of the drafting teams that have to revise some of the GNSO operating procedures in order to also conform with the new articles and the new powers that are being given to the empowered community. So, we discussed that a little bit a couple hours ago on the NCSG policy call, but let me raise it here as well that this is another place that we're looking for volunteers in this effort. So let me just sort of pause here, and before we dive into Workstream 2, see if there are any comments or questions or if anyone would like to add anything with respect to Workstream 1 or the process overall. Well, I'm not seeing any hands, and no one's, I don't hear voices. Can you guys hear me okay? I don't want to be speaking to an empty room, and that has happened before where I thought I was being heard and I actually wasn't. Okay, good. I see in the chat I'm being heard. Okay. Great. So let's dive right into some of the Workstream 2 issues. And one of the biggies is the increased transparency at ICANN that we're working to instill. And, you know, transparency is one of the most important things that we can do with respect to ICANN accountability. In some ways, it's really unfortunate that it got put off into Workstream 2 because it is so important to everything that we do. But nonetheless, that there it is. And it's important that people realize these aren't second-tier issues. These aren't issues of lesser importance than the things that we did in Workstream. One, they're just things. These are just the issues that we thought were not directly tied to the IANA transition, and so could wait until Workstream 2. So increased transparency is really one of the most important issues that we've got on our plate in Workstream 2. And if folks want to click on that sign-up sheet, the volunteer sign-up sheet that we started at last month's meeting, we've got people have put in some policy goals and some people have volunteered to participate in the working group and on these very specific issues and sort of help lead the charge for NCSG on many of these policy goals. So there are a few very specific transparency issues that we have before us. One is the reform of the document information disclosure policy, the DIDP, which really doesn't give out any information at this point, and so it needs to be modeled more on something like the Freedom of Information Act, where that actually provides information to people, rather than just reciting a laundry list of vague and opaque reasons for why it won't provide information to the public. Okay, another issue is board deliberations. Part of Workstream 1 recommendations was that we were going to remain at sort of a designator model of a corporate governance model, and so that depends very heavily upon the community knowing and understanding what the organization is actually up to. So we need more transparency with respect to board deliberations so we understand what is the thinking that is going into decisions, what is the information that's being taken into account, how is it being treated, what are the arguments, what are the positions of the board members. This is a really important issue, and I expect we're going to get a lot of pushback from the board, from ICANN Legal, when we try to get some reforms in this area. So we've got a lot of work to do there. Another issue is with respect to is just sort of creating a culture of transparency at ICANN and all the things that it does, trying to make the default rules be for transparency and with, of course, reasonable exceptions to that that are available, but that the default needs to be transparency in many cases. And then more transparency with respect to the lobbying and discussions of governments that are going on with ICANN. There's a lot of concern about the extent to which ICANN is lobbying governments, and they're not really required to report very much. And the community is sort of wondering, where is this money going and to what end? And we don't really know what ICANN is up to in that respect. And then improvements to ICANN's whistleblower policy. And this is something that I don't think has really ever been used, and maybe that's because perhaps the call goes right to the ICANN's general counsel office, I don't know. But that we need to find out what's up with that policy and how we can improve it to get it more in line with true protections for actual whistleblowers. So these are the main issues that we'll be dealing with in transparency. And as you can see, a number of people have signed up to work on these. Rafiq, Avery, Ed, Farzi, Raul, Stephanie, please add your name to this list. If this is an issue you'd like to work on, this is just a document that anyone can add to. So let me stop here on this issue and see what comments we have on this transparency issue, especially from some of the people who have signed up to work on this issue. Sort of what are the goals that you'd like to see us work towards on some of these issues? Anyone have any comments on this? Okay, I see we've got a queue started. First, Carlos, and then Stephanie. Please, Carlos, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Robin. This is Carlos. Sorry, Stephanie. I should wave to Stephanie, I think. We did it at the same time. But if not, I'll... Robin, let me tell you one impression from... Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let me just give you an impression. The first round of the accountability was heavy work, and you did a great job, and the speed of things was tremendous, and the expenses as well, and so on. Very nice. I think the second wave of issues is as important as the first one, as you said. But I'm a little bit scared the ongoing discussion about legal fees and budget and everything. I mean, it has gotten a dynamic on its own, and I think that scares people or puts people off. I really like your list of issues, and I really like the idea that the NCSG develops its own discussion about vision, about the issues, about objectives we want to get there, and we don't get bogged down into legal issues and budgets and lawyers and which firm and internal or external lawyers and so on. I get the feeling we're about to lose the vision where we are heading to just because of so much legal detail, and if it's going to be in the bylaws or in the statutes or so on. And I hope, I hope you continue facing that side of the business, but I really like this document that you just put in front of us, and I really like the idea that we develop our own brainstorming on what are our feelings about these issues without being bogged down into the details of the procedural part of the CCWG, which is becoming a nightmare, frankly. And it's becoming a fence area just for legal experts. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carlos. I appreciate that. And I'm hopeful as well that we're not going to have a lot more of these sort of time-consuming and pointless discussions where we just go around in circles every time there's a legal question, oh, which firm do we go to and who costs more, and, you know, ICANN's preference that we use the lawyers that have a legal fiduciary duty to it rather than to us is troubling. But I think we've put that to bed in the last week. God, I hope so. And it is something that the legal committee is going to be overseeing, which many of us in NCSG are members of, Farzi and Ed and myself. And it's small enough of a group that I think it won't get weighed down in these kinds of discussions that the larger plenary has, where you've got people who are just coming into the group for the first time and don't really realize that this debate has already happened and been settled and we need to move on to the substantive issues. But I think I'm hopeful that we're moving forward and, you know, based on discussions in the last couple of days. Thanks. Stephanie, you have the floor.
Thanks very much, Robin. Stephanie Perrin for the record. I just wanted to point out that it might be useful as we go through this, and I too thank you for this nice outline that we have before us. There are some cross-cutting issues where a solution for one may be a solution for others. The one that immediately leaps to my mind is we do need an independent oversight mechanism, and this speaks to what you were just talking about. How can a whistleblower policy work if the appeal is to ICANN's legal counsel that has a fiduciary duty to ICANN? You know, that's just a non-starter. Similarly, absent a court that you could appeal a failure in the DIDP system, which, of course, is the remedy in ICANN, is to go to in the United States. Sorry for the slip there. For FOI, you have to go to federal court to appeal a decision of an agency. In other jurisdictions, you can go to a supposedly independent data commissioner or information commissioner. We might want to look at some independent model as an appeal mechanism, because we're going to need it for whistleblower. We're going to need it for appeals of the ombudsman, depending on how we figure out how to fix the ombudsman's office, which is a separate category. So just if we could have a little collection of cross-cutting issues that all demand some kind of new process, procedure, or construction. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. That's a good reminder, actually, about how a lot of these issues are cross-cutting, and they're listed here separately, but, you know, many of them are extremely related to other issues. Take, for example, the transparency issue. That's going to be important also in the issue of staff accountability, the issue of SOAC accountability. So many of these issues, there is overlap, and let's be mindful of not being thinking about these issues so rigidly, and thinking about where they do overlap and how we can try to help one issue with another issue along. I see Brett has his hand up. Brett, you have the floor.
Sure. I want to address two specific issues under increased transparency at ICANN. The first is ICANN's tendency to disclose information at a very high level, 1,000-foot level, without providing the individual information underneath that, even though doing so would require a minimum of effort. I just sent a note back to the list. Xavier has provided a link to the lobbying disclosure information as published by Congress. I spent basically about 10 minutes compiling that. And so I have the lobbying disclosures since the announcement, or at least the third quarter of 2014 through the second quarter of 2016, for each of the different three lobbying firms that ICANN has hired to advance its agenda on the Hill. And so I'm providing this in annual amounts. I'm providing individually by vendor, and I'm providing a total underneath it. This is the kind of information at a minimum that ICANN should be providing in this area. But there's additional concerns because this, I'm not sure that this would capture lobbying exclusively directed toward the executive branch, nor, and this I am certain of, it doesn't capture any money that ICANN is spending trying to influence governments other than the United States. So we need to, in the Workstream 2 area, endeavor to have ICANN at least provide a minimum amount of transparency and detail on its efforts to try and influence governments on its behalf or to advance its agenda, whatever that agenda may be. But I just wanted to highlight that I got that sent around to the list, and so that is something that I think we should be insisting on. On the second part, and this is board deliberations, for those of you who were in the face-to-face back in January, I had asked Marcus to go to the board and ask them to release the minutes of the transcripts of their discussions with Fadi in relation to his acceptance of a position with the Chinese WIC. And he promised to do so. That never happened. In Morocco, I raised the issue again. Bruce Tonkin and Marcus both promised to do that. That didn't happen. Finally, in Helsinki, but just before Helsinki, I pressed Bruce and John Jeffrey directly and said, where is this? This has been 6 months now. They finally released it 6 months after the fact, and it is a study in minimalism. Basically, it says that Fadi discussed with the board members attending the international call that he accepted an invitation to co-chair. It basically just restates what was discussed. It provides no information whatsoever as to the content or the substance of those discussions. And that, again, this is an instance where the board is complying on the surface to a requirement to or an expectation to disclose information on its board meetings, but it's not providing any substance that would be of any use whatsoever to the ICANN community as to what was actually discussed and what points were raised, what possible subjects were explored that could be of interest to the community. And I think there needs to be a deeper standard for the board to disclose more substance on these types of reports. So I'll just hang up. I'll just end it there. Thanks.
Hi, Robin, we can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's perfect. Thank you very much, Robin. You may continue now.
Okay, sorry about that. I switched to my computer audio, hoping that would work, but I guess not. Okay, let me start that over again. Thanks, Brett, for bringing those for doing that analysis and also bringing those points into this discussion. Unfortunately, ICANN does have a history and a culture of minimalist disclosures, and it's part of this larger culture at ICANN of sort of circle the wagons and don't disclose any information because it will only be used against you kind of attitude. So we've got to do something that really gets the board to understand that it's in their interest for ICANN to be more open and more transparent. It seems like they've been listening to advice from their legal counsel, who is doing what they've been taught to do in law school of protecting their client to the maximum amount possible. However, that doesn't really apply appropriately to an international organization that has to do global governance. So, that kind of a mentality it might be perfectly acceptable in a corporation, but it just doesn't, it's just inappropriate for a global governance organization. And so, we really have to push on this issue strongly and really get the board and the corporate insiders, high-level executives at ICANN to understand that that is important that the community have information and understand what their decisions are and why they've come to those decisions. So I'm really glad, Brett, that you're working on this issue, and hopeful that we'll hear more from you in Workstream 2 on this issue. So thanks. I didn't really mean to just sort of go on a rant there, but I think this is such an important issue, and if we can fix this one issue, a lot of other of our accountability concerns will be able to straighten themselves out, because without that sort of black box of not understanding how decisions are made, so much we don't understand and they're able to get away with, but they won't be able to if we have a much more complete understanding about how decisions are made and why. I see Stephanie's got her hand up. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks, Robin. Stephanie Perrin for the record. I just want to echo this. What you're saying here, to my mind, there is a fundamental failure to reassess the role of individuals who show up at ICANN as stakeholders. And if the multi-stakeholder model is going to work, then stakeholders have to be treated the way citizens are under freedom of information legislation. I mean, we finally got that because it was recognized that citizens have rights. They paid for the information that government and government workers compiled, and therefore they had a right to see it and a right to have a view on it. It's part of the whole democratic process. Similarly, in a multi-stakeholder model, we have a right to see what's going on. So just as we have a right to see who's lobbying Congress, I want to see the actual briefing notes that Nigel Hickson took to when he visited the German data commissioners to discuss the failure of the RDS privacy policy. That's the kind of level of detail that we need. And for those of us who've spent any time administering freedom of information in their jurisdictions, let me tell you, you spend an awful lot of time dealing with journalists who are asking for precisely that. Where's the briefing note? Where's the legal opinion? They'll even ask for the legal opinion, and believe it or not, you don't get all of that protected under the solicited client privilege. So that's where we have to aim for this. Focus on the rights of stakeholders. Thanks.
Robin?
Thanks very much, Stephanie. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak on the transparency issue before we move on? I see Brett. Okay, Brett, please, you have the floor.
Just very quickly, I don't know when I got caught off. I sort of ended after the mention of the board's rather cursory summary of its report 6 months after the meeting with FADI took place. Did that all come through before I got cut off, or did I leave people confused?
No, I think it came through on my end.
Okay. And I also, since Matthew asked, I put the board's report, the text of it in its entirety, in the chat box. And you can see it's about four sentences, which is not the kind of really transparent disclosure that we would hope to see from a board when it's discussing something that could have ramifications for the company like this could have. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brett. Very much appreciate your work on this. Was there anyone else who wanted to get in the queue on the transparency issue? It's one of our meatier and more important issues, so I'd like to encourage as many people as possible to sign up to the CCWG and pick one of these, at least one of these sub-issues, and help do some of the work on trying to improve the transparency. Okay. Brett, is that an old hand or a new hand? Old hand, okay. Okay, so let me move on to before I move on, I'm going to paste in the chat here the list of people who have signed up to be rapporteurs in, well, it doesn't really come across very well, but this was the list of people who have signed up to be rapporteurs in the in some of the sub-issues. So if folks wanted to see who they would be working with on some of these issues. And on the transparency issue, we've got Michael Karanikolas. And I believe Ed is going to be working on that, some of that issue, some of the transparency issues as well. So the more the merrier. And like I say, this is a really big, meaty, important issue that's going to affect all the other issues. So if there's one you that you'd like to, if you think this might be one you'd like to join, please do. Okay, so moving on to the second issue, which is the creating a framework for interpretation for ICANN's new commitment to respect human rights. So as many of you know, part of the Workstream 1 recommendations was that ICANN have a bylaw whereby it agrees to respect human rights, and the trade-off was that bylaw doesn't get implemented until people understand more completely what that means. And so part of Workstream 2 is to hammer out what that means with the framework of interpretation. And NCSG has been really leading the effort on this particular issue with Tatiana and with Niels and Farzi and a number of others who have been very active on this issue as well. I was hoping we'd have either Tatiana or Niels on the call today to talk with us about this particular issue, but I don't see them. Is there anyone else who's on this call and would like to speak to this issue about how you'd like to see NCSG's participation evolve on this particular issue, what kind of goals we should have for an outcome for this particular sub-issue? Well, I don't see any hands raised, but I can say what one of the concerns is for this particular issue, and it is a concern that I share. I mean, I'm not so much that I want to, you know, go back on this particular issue, but I want people to be aware that this is going to be a big battle with the intellectual property constituency, who is really just salivating over the possibility that they might convince ICANN to essentially declare intellectual property a human right and therefore entitled to all sorts of human rights obligations and whatnot. So this is a concern, and I wanted to raise it. I think that we need to be mindful that just because the law doesn't actually comply with that view doesn't mean ICANN won't diverge from that. Anyways, okay, I see we've got a queue forming. Good. Something controversial. Go ahead. We've got Matt and we've got Stephanie. Please, Matt, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, Robin. So just a couple of perspectives from my side on this. I think what you raised, Robin, is indeed a concern, and I think it goes more broadly than that. I think we have to be very careful that we, those who are in this design team or working group or whatever they're going to be called, don't kind of go off in an incredible odyssey of trying to understand the great waterfront of human rights and trying to figure out how they apply to ICANN. I think it would be a mistake to range far and wide on this particular issue. What the real focus should be is on, which is the purpose of this design team, I always understood, was to actually review and understand what the actual bylaw means. In other words, the framework of interpretation is there to put meat and understanding, common understanding around the bylaw that is proposed to be inserted once the framework of interpretation has been agreed. So I think this design team needs to be extremely cautious in terms of how it approaches this, because it's very easy to be too comprehensive and too wide-ranging when it comes to assessing various human rights obligations. And I think that will not be productive when you consider the totality of the community at ICANN. So I guess my word is, yes, that's let's be very aware of those concerns as you raised, Robin, but let's also be very cautious and very focused in looking at what we want inside that framework of interpretation insofar as it is supposed to put meat on what the bylaw actually means. Thanks.
Thanks very much for that, Matt. You said that much, much more eloquently than I did, but I really appreciate your discussion on that issue. Stephanie, please, you have the floor.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, and I apologize for grabbing the microphone repeatedly, but I wanted to echo, Matt said it very eloquently, but another additional concern that I have, and we already see it on the RDS Hutu Working Group, we have a lot of folks who are engaged in fighting human trafficking on that working group or on the observer list. Now, we're all against human trafficking and particularly child trafficking, but we, many of us, do not want ICANN to get into the business of examining content of websites. It's not their business. And we get very, very close to it when we start looking at human rights more broadly. So just keep in mind that what happens on a website is not ICANN's business, and we shouldn't go there. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much for that, Stephanie. I think in many ways, if we could get that much out of this bylaw, it would be a huge win. I mean, if all we got was, you know, a protection for free expression and privacy and making sure that ICANN didn't put itself in the role of being the content police, then I think, you know, that would be a really big win if we could tailor this bylaw accordingly. Did anyone else want to weigh in on this issue? It's something we've had a lot of discussion within NCSG on. A number of our members have been pretty heavily involved in the crafting of it so far. And let me see, who did we have that signed up to be the rapporteur for this one? Niels, and I believe Nigel Roberts. So Niels Ten Ovier and Nigel Roberts are signed up to be the two rapporteurs on this human rights issue. Okay. All right, so shall we move on to the next issue then? Which is influence of ICANN's jurisdiction on operational policies and accountability mechanisms. Okay, and who signed up to be rapporteur on this one? We've got, I should note, it looks like Paul McGrady is also signed up to be a rapporteur on the human rights one from the intellectual property constituency. So there are three on that one. Okay, back to the jurisdictional issue. It's Greg Chatan and Vinay Kesari who have signed up to be the rapporteurs on that particular sub-issue for the CCWG. And I know we've got a lot of interest within our own stakeholder group on this particular issue. And, you know, I don't think I can say there is a single civil society view on this particular issue and how this should be interpreted. But there has been some discussion about how the jurisdiction of ICANN will actually impact the way that it implements its operational policies, the extent to which its accountability mechanisms can be effective, and on the one hand, this is a real deep dive into this kind of a discussion, and then on the other hand, there's a lot of people who see this issue as an opportunity to debate where to move ICANN's legal headquarters to. And so, you know, particularly in the GAC and even within civil society and other corners as well, really kind of look to this particular sub-issue as a battleground zone for having ICANN's headquarters moved somewhere else. So there's a lot of diversity of viewpoints about how this to shape this particular issue in the next coming few months. And so this would be another one that would be really important for our members to be actively engaged on, since it will also have enormous impact on all of the other issues that we're working on. Okay, I see we've got a queue forming on this one. ART, please, you have the floor.
Thanks, Robin. This is ART Bhavna for the record. Jurisdiction is going to be an interesting issue because of all the interest that comes from it. One thing that we will have to make clear right in the beginning is what all is up for debate right now, because as per Annex 12 of the first report that came out on workstream 1 issues, they seem to suggest that we will not be considering the physical relocating the physical location of ICANN's headquarters. But this is something that a lot of people are pushing for, including government. So this is something that we really need to understand and make clear right in the beginning. Otherwise, this is going to be a constant battle of people wanting to talk only about legal jurisdiction and the discussion being dragged back to physical jurisdiction or physical location of ICANN. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, this is an issue where we do continue to, like several of the other issues, kind of go in circles with, you know, somebody who's just not happy with the outcome of the previous discussion, not letting it go, and continuing to bring it forward. So, which is why I say this is going to be somewhat of a battleground, because we do have a lot of different people want a lot of different things from this sub-issue. And I see we've got Matt in the queue. So, Matt, please, you have the floor.
Thanks, Robin. So, this is, I think, one of the biggest challenges about these work streams, post-transition accountability-related work, is going to be appropriately putting parameters on them so don't continue on for years going around and around the same issues. This particular one is going to be the most difficult one for the reasons that were just explained, is that there are many interests in continuing to debate the jurisdiction or location of ICANN's headquarters and its place of business. It's really important that this workstream group understand that that is already expressly stated in the new bylaws that have been adopted and forwarded on to NTIA as a part of the transition package. It's very clearly states in the new bylaws that California is the place of business for ICANN. Now, this does not mean that it's not something that could change, but we need to be very careful about the way we talk about this. There is now a mechanism through the empowered community by which it is conceivable that the jurisdiction, ICANN's jurisdiction, could change to another location. But this is really not the issue that we should be discussing from my perspective, in the jurisdiction discussion in Workstream 2. Because if we do, we run the risk of having a somewhat fruitless conversation in the first place, but also run the risk of inflaming certain perhaps misguided but very important views that exist, for example, on the Hill, where there have been statements made to the effect that it is possible to change, that ICANN is trying to leave its current jurisdiction, that there are states that are explicitly trying to make it leave its current jurisdiction. And it would be unfortunate if that debate continued, because I think it would contribute to imperiling the transition, particularly when we've already been through this debate and already agreed within the bylaws that that it is where it is. There is a mechanism for changing it, and we need to really be clear on that in the work. At least that's my perspective. Thanks.
Thanks very much for that, Matt. I see Brett is next in the queue. Please, Brett, go ahead.
I agree with most of what Matthew said. I think that the issue should be settled. Unfortunately, it is not settled. And I do think that, although I don't know that their chances are all that robust or that large, I think that there is a group of individuals who would like to have ICANN change its jurisdiction. And that is, I think, would be incredibly expensive to do. I think it would be incredibly disruptive to do, and I think it would be incredibly unfortunate to pursue that course. But it's one of the reasons why I have advocated for a delay until we actually see the end of Workstream 2, because I want to make sure that we are certain of this before we move forward, because I think it would be so destructive and so disruptive. So even though I agree with Matthew that it should be a settled issue, I do not agree with him that it is necessarily a settled issue, however much I might wish it to be. So I would just urge everybody to going into Workstream 2 to try and keep those concerns in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. And as I said, this one is definitely going to be a battleground, and perhaps the one that may get the most media attention of the different sub-issues. I mean, certainly then nobody's going to care about, you know, reforming the ombudsman press or the diversity. But ICANN's moving its headquarters is definitely something that the media will want to keep an eye on. So I do expect this will continue to be quite a hotbed issue going forward. Stephanie, please, you're next in the queue.
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Just a question. That whole issue seems to me so fraught with peril that I would have thought a simple risk assessment would be sufficient to put any sensible person off the concept of embarking on it. I can understand why certain governments might want to embark on it, but at least civil society ought to have a uniform view on this, no? And if there is such a risk assessment, could we make sure people are aware of it? And if there isn't, should we do one?
Thanks, Stephanie. Phil Corwin had made a very compelling argument on this issue to the CCWG about, you know, all of the kinds of issues that we'd have to look at and evaluate and how much would it actually cost to even begin to look at this and evaluate this. And, you know, for what's the upside, it really kind of remains to be seen. So I think the majority of participants in the CCWG have been persuaded by arguments like Phil's and yours on the issue. But, you know, there's another perspective that is just very ideologically driven and isn't really looking for things like risk assessments. It's perhaps more principled, to be generous. okay, did anyone else have something that they wanted to add on this issue? Again, I'm going to encourage folks to sign up and join the CCWG and join this particular sub-issues working group. The different sub-issues have been divided up into different working groups, and they each have their own mailing list, and we'll be setting up calls in the coming weeks. It's still in the early formation stages, so you're not too late to join. Really, none of the charters of these groups have been set up or the call schedule. It's pretty much just been a single email saying, welcome to this list. So now is the time to join. Okay. Commercial over. Next issue. staff accountability. Okay. So, and this is another issue that it was primarily the NCSG that pushed this issue, even getting in Workstream 2 at all at the very last minute. We managed to get this particular issue in. And this issue is... it's hard for a lot of people to understand initially, particularly if you come from more of a business perspective, because one thinks, well, it's the board's job to manage the staff. It's not the community's job, so this issue is inappropriate. And that may be true in a typical corporate setting. However, ICANN is nothing like a typical corporate setting in this respect. And we have board members who don't stay very long typically. You know, they are term limited at some point. And so there's not a lot of institutional memory on the board. And the board relies extremely heavily on the senior staff and their legal counsel who have been here forever to guide them. And so, unfortunately, we have a situation where we've got the staff too often leading the board at ICANN, and so we can't exactly depend upon the board to be the ones to figure that out and to manage the staff. And so that's one of the reasons why this issue has found its way into Workstream 2. And Avery has agreed to be a rapporteur for this issue. So that's great. And so if there are other members of NCSG who can bring some experience, perhaps, to this issue, to the working group, please do sign up and join on this issue as well. So let me just sort of leave those remarks there and open it up to the larger group and hear what others' thoughts are on this particular issue of reforming staff accountability and how NCSG or the CCWG can do that, how we should do that, what kinds of issues have you had that we should be looking at that we should address in this particular sub-issue. So, anyone? Thanks. Yes, ART, please go ahead.
Thanks, Robin. You asked me for the record. I think one issue that we really need to focus on is gas accountability. Because as far as I remember, this was up in the air with the previous proposal. So this is something that we still need to discuss and to make sure that if all SOs and ACs are to be accountable, then gas accountability can't be left to the AC itself, and it has to be done in a more open and transparent manner. Thanks.
Thank you, and I'm glad you raised this issue of GAC accountability, because that is something that is within the Workstream 2 issues, but I think this more that GAC accountability more properly falls under the next sub-issue, which is SOAC accountability, and GAC being one of the ACs, the Governmental Advisory Committee, and the extent to which they don't require democratic processes and they don't require transparency and, you know, these other sorts of democratic and good governance and accountable mechanisms that the rest of us in the community have to live by. You know, we have to have democratic elections to get people on the GNSO Council, but the GAC doesn't. I mean, they could just install whomever they wanted in that person could be in government because they toppled the government before them, not because they're democratically elected, but, you know, that's what you win when you topple a government, a seat in the GAC. So there is some concern about, you know, the extent to which that particular AC isn't less accountable than the others. But at the same time, you know, we all have to make improvements in all of our houses. And, you know, there are transparency problems and democracy problems in the GNSO as well. And, you know, so nobody is going to have squeaky clean hands on this, but we all do need to take a serious look at what kinds of policies we need to put in place in our own house and in the other houses to make sure that we are being more accountable. And so that was just sort of a segue there, I guess, from the issue number 4 of staff accountability and issue number 5 into the SOAC accountability. So we're kind of doing both of those at the same time here, so I hope that's okay. And I see we've got a queue forming. First is Stephanie and then Matthew.
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin. For the record, I'm back at staff accountability, and I just wanted to emphasize that not only would I like to see the management contracts of staff, and I don't mean how much their bonuses are tied to achievements. I want to know what the achievements that they're expected to reach must be. I don't want to be laboring on a PDP that I think will take 4 years if the person who's actually in charge, who I don't necessarily know who that is, has to deliver it within a year or lose her bonus. That's the kind of thing that I think you find out when you see management contracts. And there might be outcomes in there that imply policy decisions. I want to look for that. I also want to be able through the DI, and this is why it's a cross-cutting issue, I want to know what briefings staff have been given when they go on a mission. I refer to Nigel going to Germany to check with the data commissioners. What was his mission? To get them to back off or to seek advice and invite them to come to the next meeting? On top of this, we must remember that ICANN spends an awful lot of money via contract, and we don't necessarily know who's supervising those contracts. The independent reviews are done via contract. We have Westlake in recent memory, and we need to know who's supervising them and what those instructions to the contractors are. I want to be able to get that through a DIDP. So this staff accountability, I signed up for it. There's a lot here that I think we don't get. And if we are truly to treat stakeholders as citizens, then we need to enforce our rights here. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. I was just about to beg you to sign up for this sub-issue, because I think all of these ideas are right on the money for the kinds of issues that we need to be looking at, and so I'm thrilled to hear that you've signed up to focus on that issue. I think that will be enormously, tremendously helpful for this working group. Thank you. Next in our queue is Matthew. Go ahead, Matthew.
Thanks, Robin. I just put a question into the chat because it may be obvious, but I've never really thought about it, which is, when we're talking about staff, are we talking also about senior management? Stephanie, you know, mentioned Nigel, for example. But what about the management, and what about the president and CEO, who he or she is obviously accountable to the board as well? But there are other accountabilities that lie within senior management, and it never really occurred to me whether or not that's also encompassed by the term staff. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. I think that it's, you know, staff at the highest level, and so not focusing on them and only focusing on the people who simply below them and take the orders from them would be a mistake. That, you know, this is, we need to focus on where these decisions are being made, and that is at the senior level. I mean, you know, people hear a lot of us doing a lot of complaining about staff, but the truth is that our complaining is about the senior, high-level executive staff, the staff that we work with on a daily basis, you know, to do the nuts and bolts of actually running the stakeholder group are wonderful, are terrific, but it's you know, it's the senior-level executives who are making these decisions that are anti-democratic, that are top-down, that put aside the desires of the stakeholders in preference for the desires of the corporation. And so, you know, that's, if we don't focus on them, then we're not focusing on the problem, in my view. Did anyone else want to add to this? Okay, I don't see any more hands. And we've already started also the topic of the SOAC accountability, because it is very much tied and related to the issue of staff accountability, the issue of transparency, many of the issues that we've already discussed. And I believe Farzi has signed up to be one of the rapporteurs on this particular group, so that's wonderful. Is there anyone else who wants to speak to this issue and weigh in on what you think we ought to work towards on this particular issue? Okay, well, I don't see any hands on this or comments, so I will move forward. But again, I'd like to encourage anyone who's interested in working on this issue to please sign up. Okay, so the next issue on Workstream 2 is the reform of the Ombudsman's Office. And this was the Office of the Ombudsman at ICANN is a place where you're supposed to go if you feel like you've been treated unfairly by the organization or by some component of the stakeholder groups, communities, often it is used as sort of a mediation type, dispute resolution type of process. I think that ICANN has stretched the definition of ombudsman to some extent. Many would say not nearly enough, that the ombudsman isn't nearly the proper role and have the kind of independence that it should have. So that's one of the reasons why this is here. This particular issue is in Workstream 2. Anybody want to speak to how they think this particular issue should evolve, how we can improve the Ombudsman's Office at ICANN? I have heard that the existing Ombudsman, his contract was not renewed, and the Deputy Ombudsman will be filling in while they search for a replacement. Okay, well, I'm not seeing too many comments on this. Again, I don't expect the media to be following this one closely. okay, we do have a hand raised. Stephanie, please go ahead.
As you can tell, I have a view on everything. Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I signed up for this one, too. I happen to think the ombudsman has been doing the best he can in a difficult situation. So the reform of his office, I think it's difficult, but he needs more power, and there needs to be a review mechanism. And I think in terms of the hiring process, and he cannot possibly report directly to the board. That's a conflict. He needs more independence. So there's quite a few things to fix here. And in keeping with the concept that he should not report directly to the board, somehow he has to be accountable to stakeholders. And we don't have a process for that right now. So we need to think hard about that. I don't have an answer. And we need to maybe look at some of the other models. I think Chris himself has been to ombudsman meetings and may have valuable input, which we need to dredge out of him before he goes. But there is, an International Association of Ombudsmen, and they may have recommendations on how to hire independently, how to report independently, and how to review. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Stephanie. I think you've got some great ideas on this one as well, and I'm so glad we'll have your experience in this working group. I think it will have a tremendous impact at the end of the day. So thank you very much. Anybody else want to weigh in on the reforming the Ombudsman's Office? I agree that we need to have, for the Ombudsman to have more independence and more power, particularly, the idea that the Ombudsman is paid from by this organization, reports to the board, can be fired by the board, goes to the staff parties, you know, hangs out with the staff, is treated like one of the staff. It does create a conflict of interest, and perhaps not so much with this ombudsman, but the one previous, it was a really big problem, and it is an area that I think we can target working on, and that Workstream 2 is creating a more robust level of independence. But as Stephanie says, being ultimately responsible to the stakeholders as well, that it's not only the corporation that it is beholden to. So I think that's those are very important points she raised. Okay, is there anyone else who wants to get in on the Ombudsman's Office issue? Okay, so let's move on to diversity at ICANN. Let's see. I'm trying to look and see who signed up to be the rapporteur of diversity. Oh, okay. Oh, Rafiq has signed up to be one of the rapporteurs on this. So that's great. And let's see, is Rafiq on the call? No, I think he probably had to go to bed. It's the middle of the night in Japan. So unfortunately, he's not able to discuss this particular issue. But I know there's a number of issues with respect to, you know, what kind of diversity are we talking about? What do we mean when we say we're looking for diversity? We're not just looking for people who, you know, have different colored shoes on, but are also of different backgrounds and hold different perspectives. And so really ideological differences is something that we should focus on here. And differences amongst income, I think that, you know, we get a lot of people at ICANN, but 99% of them, and it doesn't matter where they're from, are relatively wealthy people, and we don't get a lot of viewpoint from any particular region that isn't that the wealthy viewpoint from that region. So I think that that's another diversity issue we should be looking at. Does anybody want to weigh in on diversity? Can we get any more volunteers or any more ideas about how this can be defined or how we can work on this particular sub-issue? Okay, well, I don't see any more hands on this one, so I'm going to move on. Again, encouraging anyone who's thinking about joining this subgroup to please join. Okay, and so then the next issue would be reviewing the cooperative engagement process, also known as the CEP, which is basically the first step to filing an IRP case, independent review panel matter. And I know Ed has agreed to be a rapporteur on this, which is good because he's had some experience, some CEP experience with me in the ICANN's legal department, and so is in a good position to understand where some of the reforms are needed on this particular issue. I see Dee Dee has her hand up, so please, Dee Dee, go ahead. I don't hear you, Dee Dee. Are you?
I don't hear you, Dee Dee.
Okay, I don't. I don't see.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hello.
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 Hello, can you hear me? Is anyone on this call?
Hello, did you get this? Hello?
Hello, who is this? I'm sorry, but I can't, all I hear is somebody saying hello, and I'm not sure who that is. If you can hear me, please go ahead with your comment. Yeah, or perhaps you can type your question or your comment into the chat. I'm just not hearing. I'm just not hearing you, or occasionally just hearing a very faint hello. I'm sorry. Okay, so if there's no one else in the queue, okay, so we're on the CEP, reviewing, reforming the CEP, and do we have any additional volunteers or people who would like to work on this particular issue? Ideas about how we need to, what reforms we need to undertake? Okay, well, I'm not seeing any hands on this one, so we will, again, come back to this one as it gets kicked off, and when Ed can join the call, I think we'll have more information as well about how we can expect that particular subgroup to move forward. Okay, so we'll come back to that one. Okay, so the I see we've got a comment from Dee Dee in the chat, and she says, I think the idea of having groups of interested participants gather at connection centers like was done for Mundial was excellent and will be a way to have more diversity within NCSG. Oh, yeah, that's an interesting idea. So, you know, sort of have people in different geographic regions gather together and participate remotely together. You know, if you can't get all the way around the world, well, maybe you can get to the next state over and join in with a lot of other people who can and have it feel a sense of community and a sense of inclusiveness and participation. I think that was very well received at the Net Mundial, that's a really good idea for something we could try to incorporate into the diversity sub-issue in Workstream 2. Thanks for that. Okay, well, not seeing any more hands in the queues, let's move on to our last issue, which is the guidelines for ICANN board standard of conduct, and this is with respect to removal of board members. And I think it's important that people realize this is with respect to the indemnity provisions that have been created for, or that will be created for the board if they want to be indemnified by the corporation for their actions. Then, you know, they can't act too crazy, they can't commit fraud, things like that. So I think that that's really what that issue is supposed to be about. I do have a bit of a concern that it could be misinterpreted as an issue by which we may put some kind of limitations or qualifications around community members' rights to exercise their right under the new empowered community to remove board members, because the wording around it has been a bit cagey at times. And, you know, we've had to press for clarifications, and then, yes, okay, it is about it is with respect to the indemnity provision, so that's fine, but I think it's worth keeping an eye on. Did anybody want to speak on this particular issue? Can we get anyone to join in the working group and take on this issue? And I think Lori Shulman, formerly of NPOC and now with the IPC, has signed up to be the rapporteur for this particular sub-issue within the CCWG. So that's who would be leading this effort. Okay, well, I'm not seeing any hands on this one. So that's the nine sub-issues, and I do appreciate your bearing with me while we go through these. I realize it can be a bit arduous, but, you know, the work's got to be done. So here we are. Next on our agenda is discussion of a next month's call where we can review our progress and work, see if we can get more collaborative and working together. I also want to remind folks that we've set up a mailing list, a specific NCSG mailing list, to try to foster more discussion on this particular issue where we can bounce ideas off each other and try to work collaboratively to come to some joint position, so it's not only this once a month call where we can all check in with each other, but we could do so on a more regular basis with the mailing list. So it's on the agenda, end of the agenda up there under the reading list. So please, everyone's welcome to sign up. It's every NCSG member is welcome to sign up. It is an open, transparent, archived mailing list, as all of our mailing lists are. So please consider joining. Okay, so for next month, how would basically trying to do the same thing that we did this month work for folks, which is basically the third Tuesday of the month, which would come out to the 16th of August next month. And we could shoot for the same time, which was the most popular one in the doodle that we'd sent around in organizing this call. So if this time generally works for folks, let's maybe see if we can go with it again next month and see how that works. Any thoughts on that? Okay, I see a comment here that the WHOIS PDP calls are from 1600 to 1800 UTC on Tuesdays, but we have these calls a little earlier. Yeah, that would be fine with me. Absolutely. We could push it up 2 hours or push it up 1 hour. I'm happy to send out another doodle if folks like, but what I would really like to do is to get in a regular monthly pattern where it's the same time every where it's the same, basically the same time every month, whether it's the third Tuesday or the second Wednesday or the fourth Thursday, whatever that is. I see Matt posts that we had the NCSG policy call on Tuesday, and it's great not to be back-to-back. And I agree with that in some respects, and I don't think that would be a problem for next month because I've looked at the schedule for the GNSO Council call, and it looks like it's not going to create any kind of like our two calls won't be in conflict like they were this month. But I can certainly try to see if we can get as much space as possible in between them. Any other thoughts on this? I see Tapani is typing, and he's our master lord here, so let's when it comes to scheduling these meetings, so let's see what he has to say. Right. Yeah, he says the next policy call will be on a Monday because the council call will be on Tuesday, August 9th. Exactly. So if we did this call next month on August 16th, it wouldn't conflict with that, and it would, I believe, be on the Tuesday that isn't the plenary CCWG calls. So, you know, every 2 weeks we're going to be having these plenary CCWG calls, and then that's on Tuesdays. And then basically, so this particular NCSG CCWG focus call would be on the other Tuesday. So basically, you could think of Tuesday. Tuesdays is your CCWG days. Or at least two of them a month. Okay, well, I'm not seeing any more comments on that, so let's move forward with that unless folks weigh in otherwise. And is there any other business? Was there anything else anyone wanted to raise with respect to our CCWG accountability participation? Crickets. Okay, great. So I guess we can wrap this meeting up, and thank you all for participating, and we'll see you all then, same time, same station, next month. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. We can end the recording.